It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins are with us today. Hello, folks.
Good morning, Ben.
Hey, Ben.
Good to have you with us here today. What are we talking about today, Cecil?
Ben, the last couple of weeks we've talked about maintaining, if you will, or safeguarding the legality, the sanctity of the last will and testament. We talked about the fact that the original, we like to maintain the original within our vault system at our office. But if the original is going to be kept any place other than in a safe place at your lawyer's office, we do suggest that the original document be maybe kept in a lockbox or some place where it is just not readily available to anyone to, you know, to write on or to, you know, take away, and forget to put back, any of those kinds of things that we sometimes hear about. We talked about the photostatic copy and how under, you know, extreme circumstances, it is possible that sometimes, we are able to lay a foundation, for there to be the admission of a photostatic copy. But we really don't want to go into that, kind of excessive cost or problems if under the most, that's just very unfortunate to have to go down that road, Ben.
And we also talked about what happens when somebody writes on the will and adds.
Well,
to
that's
it,
right. Writes on the will or, you know, amends, certain provisions on the original document. These things happen, Ben, you know, very frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And it, of course, creates ambiguity, confusion, you know, it's a problem. Now, one of the other things that we're going to lead up to is, you know, a challenge to a will. We certainly see a lot of those. That's known in the law as a caveat. We want to talk a moment about an amendment or the famous legal word codicil to a will. We've talked about this before on the program, but it's been a while. A codicil, Ben, is in fact an amendment or modification to an existing will, but it must maintain and have, if you will, the same dignity and legality as the original will. In other words, it's going to need to be signed. It's going to need to have two witnesses. Those witnesses need to sign under the signature of a notary so that the notary can notarize their signatures. And then, of course, when the will is admitted to the court, not only is the original will admitted, but this codicil must then be admitted.
Mm-hmm.
And then the two are read together. Now, already, Ben, isn't this beginning to sound like an accident waiting to happen?
Yes, it sounds okay. Like lots of issues
that
can come
Our
up.
Office really does not many times recommend a codicil. A codicil or amendment, certainly in my opinion, should not be used to modify, you know, the disposition of your estate. You know, the percentages, the heirs, take someone out, put someone in, that kind of thing. It's best just to, what's the alternative? It's just to do a new will.
Right.
Okay. And it, by the way, probably is going to involve, an equal amount of time for your lawyer to just do a new will as to do a properly executed codicil. So it's not going to be that much more expensive, but it probably is going to be much more clear. Now, if for some reason you're just changing the name of an executor, something very minor, like that, maybe your executor now has died and you want to name a different executor. This, of course, could potentially be a codicil that Wes and I would pass on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But to,
it still has to be executed.
It still, of course, absolutely it does. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to change what we lawyers call the dispositive provision of your will. Because think about it for a moment, Ben. both the original will, which used to include these witnesses, mm-hmm. or at those percentages. Now, you know, right there in the file is the fact that you came forward and you changed the percentages or took that person out. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or added someone in. This, of course, you know, again, is brewing ground, real fertile ground for there to be, you know, confusion, potentially now, you know, an allegation of incompetence or undue influence. Why did you change the will? What were the circumstances?
Right.
We'd much rather go with just a nice, clean, one original and put that on record as truly the intent of the testator.
Yeah, in this electronic age, it seems like it's especially if you have the original will on an electronic file, it's just as easy to change that, isn't it? I mean, seems like that would be the easy step these days instead of having to rewrite and recreate one.
Yeah, there's no question about that. The logistics of it, just without having to retype the entire thing, is mm-hmm. it's easier to do it that way. So,
but I can imagine there'd be a scenario maybe where mm-hmm. in the original will someone said, I'm going to divide these real properties, these mm-hmm. parcels up, all my real property up between my three kids, and then they acquire another piece of property later in life and
right.
so decide they want that one to go somewhere else.
Well, yeah, and you know, it's interesting you bring up that, because this is another issue we see with wills sometimes. You know, we talking about codicils this morning, but sometimes we see just poorly drafted documents. We have a couple wills in our office right now that we're dealing with and trying to interpret what in the world they're saying, like the scenario you mm-hmm. just mentioned. You know, I have these properties, I want to leave them this way, then you acquire another. Well, that should be captured in what's called a residuary clause.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever I have that right. I haven't addressed,
yeah.
this is how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how most well-drafted wills will be prepared. Where, you know, you may have some specific bequest of this amount to the church or this amount to this particular friend or grandchild or whatever, or even, mm-hmm. You know, specific amounts. And then you kind of capture everything else in that residuary clause, maybe break it down by percentages so we capture everything. We have a will in our office right now that we're dealing with, no residuary clause.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to figure out what the intent of the testator was. Under this document, because it doesn't address everything that he had,
mm-hmm.
and there's no residuary. So
something's left on the table.
Well, you know, I mean, we sometimes spin into, depending on how much is in controversy and how aggressive the parties are, we sometimes spin into a court action called a declaratory judgment action for the court to make a declaration as to what was intended by the document.
Mm.
So, yeah, will litigation, whether it be petition for probate or loss will, issues with regard to interpretation of the language in the will caveats, which we'll talk about here in a minute, all of that can be avoided, really, if you get with a good attorney,
mm-hmm.
take your time, and kind of follow these steps that we've been talking about. I mean, we can really mitigate the possibilities of there being these problems later on that do get to be expensive.
And again, as we're talking about it with a codicil, you could have the will in your vault, and then after the person passes away, the will comes out, but then here comes a relative with an extra page.
Got that one in my office right now, too. You know, we do the estate planning, and we prepare the will, and there's a trust in the will. And then the individual decides to do a holographic codicil after the fact. And it was valid, all in the person's handwriting, signed by the person. And it disrupted a lot of the things that we had done in the previous document.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get into too much detail, but it created a couple legal problems without this person knowing it, because the person really just decided in the codicil that that she was going to leave a particular piece of real estate in a different way,
mm-hmm.
as compared to the way it was in the will. Made a big difference about whether one of the parties could elect to take the property or have it sold.
So essentially it becomes a second will that you have to read
That's right.
together.
You have to read it together. There's no question about that.
Yeah, it's fascinating part of the law. I mean, again, and infuriating at the same time.
I think, Ben, that what Wes and I see is that, and you know, it's part of the purpose, if you will, the real objective of this radio program now going on for, gosh, how many years?
A dozen or more,
12 or more years here at 7:30 on mm-hmm. Tuesday mornings. And I remember, you know, being much younger 12 years ago, but the bottom line was thinking, you know, what can we do, you know, as a law firm to kind of demystify the law, to, you know, to just kind of every week just kind of talk about different legal issues and hopefully make folks a little bit more comfortable with lawyers and their legal issues. And there's a lot of anxiety and fear associated with, you know, when we go to the dentist, mm-hmm. when we go to the doctor, when we go to the lawyer. I mean, I had an appointment yesterday, Ben, where the lady literally was having difficulty catching her breath. And finally, I just said, you know, ma'am, let's just breathe together a little bit. You know, here, I mean, she was so filled with anxiety as a result of having to come in to see us. You know, we recognize that. This is alien territory. Now, one of the fears, Ben, is the cost of things. Mm-hmm. And the reason that this person, more than likely, as Wes was explaining, wrote out an amendment to their will was because they just were afraid that, gosh, to have, you know, the lawyer do that is just going to cost an arm and a leg, mm-hmm. you know. And we also understand this. And this is why we tell people, you know, give us a call. Come in to see us. We're not going to charge you just to come in to see us. We will then tell you what it will cost. Mm-hmm. And you then make a decision, yes or no. And I think most lawyers handle their files this way. And, of course, what many times happens is that this person who wrote out this will, for instance, or wrote out a amendment to mm-hmm. their will, you know, if they had...
We're going to take a break. Yeah, we'll come back and we'll finish that up in just a second here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. Hey, welcome back here on A Coastal Daybreak and Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us. And Cecil, we were talking again about the fears and anxieties that some people have.
Well, I was just saying that, you know, this person Wes is referring to who wrote out, you know, an amendment, if you will, to their will in their own handwriting, you know, known as a codicil. Probably, who knows why this person did not come back and seek legal advice on this. But sometimes, Ben, it's because of the fear of the cost of things. And what I suggest to our listeners, just being upfront, is that, you know, ask what the costs are. Don't assume. You know, wills can be, you know, $125, $250. I mean, they are not necessarily, you know, thousands of dollars or even $1,000. When trusts are involved, when complicated wills are involved, yes, there can be some, you know, they can cost more than that. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of thing that you ask on the front end and you understand exactly what you are, engaging in, just like you do when you go to Best Buy mm-hmm. or in when you go to buy a car. There's a price on the car and you decide, well, can I afford this one or can I afford that one? Sometimes there are options even that we lawyers give clients in terms of their planning. You know, well, there's, if we turn to the right, option A, we can keep it very simple. I had a file like this very recently, where the gentleman was given two options. We can keep this very, very simple, or if you would like to involve, you know, a mm-hmm. trust for your child, you know, to control some of the inheritance at some point, then we can't, there is a way to make it, to achieve that objective, but it is going to be, more, costly to prepare those documents.
Right.
Exactly. And he then makes a decision.
Yeah. So, again, as you said, the idea is demystify that. And, but unfortunately, so many times with a will, you don't have the testator. I mean, you don't have the person that you can do that with. You only have their relatives.
That's right. And you bring up another good point, Ben. There's a new statute actually in North Carolina where you can prove the will before the person dies.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This is something that's relatively new and haven't used it yet. Mm-hmm. But it's something that's on the books. So what it's designed to do is to avoid a caveat in the event we think we have maybe contentious beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. In the event we think that the individual who signed the will, was, you know, maybe had some deficiencies at that point in time.
Right.
Maybe did have even a dementia, presentation of some sort. But that doesn't necessarily mean the person doesn't have the capacity to enter a will.
Mm-hmm.
So who ultimately makes the decision as to whether that person, you know, had the capacity? Well, if you're filing one of these actions to prove the will prior to death, then the jury makes that decision, and then it's conclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Then there will not be a caveat on that will after this person dies. And you see the benefit of that. The person's not there to testify
right.
after he's passed away, but
right.
if we prove the will before he passes away, then, you know, obviously the person, he or she, could come forward, testify, and the jury can make a determination as to whether this person knew what he or she was doing,
mm-hmm.
if this is really what he or she wanted, so on and so forth. So we can kind of close the door on that,
mm-hmm.
that issue. So,
they essentially can offer testimony about that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So instead of going through the process of, jumping through the hoops of the dead man statute and hearsay issues and
mm-hmm.
interested witnesses and medical records and opinions of experts and mm-hmm. all this expense and time and effort in a will caveat, which sometimes is necessary, we can kind of just ask it from the horse's mouth,
mm-hmm.
the testator.
Right.
See how he's doing. Put on his testimony, her testimony, and resolve that issue as it relates to the particular will prior to the death.
Is that, mm-hmm. is that similar to a deposition? I mean, there are questions that are asked well?
There would be direct examination mm-hmm. and cross examination.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be, but think of it though, it's litigation, but it's a whole lot simpler
mm-hmm.
than going through a full-blown caveat proceeding.
Right.
Because we're trying to prove something in a caveat through other sources. We're trying to prove there was not undue influence or there was undue influence. We're trying to prove the capacity issue. And we're having to do that usually through expert witnesses, through medical records, through the witnesses who actually saw
mm-hmm.
the man or the woman at that point in time. But if we can just go right to the person whose will we're questioning as it relates to, have you been unduly influenced?
Right. Right.
Do you have the capacity? I mean, we can ask questions about, you know, who's the president?
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you make change if you bought this? Who's your family?
Yeah.
What assets do you have? And we kind of boil this thing down to maybe an hour
mm-hmm.
instead of, you know, a year of working on it.
Right.
And then an eventual trial. So that's a possibility.
Okay. Again, talking about some innovations also in the law, too. We'll look more at this in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. You could probably still sneak a question in at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. Welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station. And as typical with the law, every time we bring up one thing, it brings a question about another, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think we were leading up to just kind of talk briefly about mm-hmm. the caveat proceeding
mm-hmm.
because we were mentioning this proving the will during the person, the testator's.
To avoid a caveat.
Yeah, to avoid a caveat lifetime. But, you know, the caveat is really just a challenge to the will. It's an action that's brought after the person's passed away, and we now learn what the will is, and we see that
mm-hmm.
it's not what we thought it was, and maybe there's some real questions about it, such as maybe it was executed days before the person died. Maybe the person had advanced Alzheimer's or,
mm-hmm.
or a significant dementia presentation or just grossly forgetful or, you know, had an advanced stage illness of some sort where
mm-hmm.
they really had lost their capacity to be able to make decisions. And, this is something we think was procured through fraud or undue influence by a caregiver,
mm-hmm.
You know, that type of situation. And, you know, really, if the will is properly executed and it's the original, it's going to be accepted by the court as long as it meets all the criteria of a valid will on its face. So that's what controls assets. So in the event a beneficiary feels as though they were damaged by this undue influence, lack of capacity, whatever, however we got to the point where this will was executed, then, you know, the only mechanism to deal with that is to challenge that will. And that is, as we've talked about on the program before, is, you know, you file an action to challenge the will.
In Superior Court.
That's before a jury. Jury makes a determination as to whether the script is in fact the will. We always take into consideration issues such as, was there a prior will? What did the prior will indicate? Do we have the prior will in the event that we, you know, the last will is set aside? Then that usually is going to revive the prior will. So we look at how that affects us, or it, will the assets pass intestate, without a will in the event the last will, doesn't survive. And, you know, you go through the process of any, like any other lawsuit. You're going through the discovery, getting medical records, you're deposing witnesses, you're getting ready for that trial, and then you put on all the evidence and the jury makes a determination as to whether the will was or was not. And the two primary issues that you look at would be, you know, undue influence. And in the event that the jury finds that the will was the result of undue influence from someone else, then that alone would set the will aside, okay? Or lack of capacity, which is if the individual did not understand basically who his or her beneficiaries were, what assets he had, or the effect of the document that he signed, the will, the script. So that alone, in the event the jury agrees that it was, or the person did not have the capacity, would serve to set the will aside. So it's a drawn out process, and it's an arduous process, as most litigation is in Superior Court.
I would imagine a challenge to a will, though, if it seems to be certainly legal on its face, a challenge is going to be a difficult hurdle.
Juries in general don't like setting aside someone's will. You kind of, right from the beginning, that smell test is pretty strong if there's some issues with the will. You know, you look at the timing of it. The will was signed many years ago. It's probably going to be a lot more difficult if it was signed at the last second. To overturn. At the last second, then that usually, you know, helps in the event that, you know, most of the family or all the family is disinherited and everything goes to this one caregiver. At that on its face, it's starting to look pretty good. So, you know, right from the beginning, sitting down with a good attorney who deals with these kind of things, the attorney's going to be able to give you a pretty strong roadmap as it relates to that when we just look at these preliminary issues and the facts.
If you want to get on that roadmap on the right direction, you want to call on the folks at Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law at 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City, online at harvellandcollins.com, and you can call them to set up that first appointment at 252-726-9050. That's 726-9050.